Today is February 22nd, Sunday morning at Shari Tefillah. We're learning Mishnah, the Mishnah Masechet Pesachim. We're in chapter 10, Perek Yud, and we have already arrived to Mishnah Hay, the fifth Mishnah. We remind ourselves just briefly of the earlier Mishnayot in the chapter. I'm just going to go through them quickly. We remember that the first Mishnah said, Arvei Pesachim Samuch Lemincha, right, the evening of Pesach, in other words, the hours before Pesach, before Mincha time, you don't eat, it said. You want to go into the holiday with a good appetite. And it said afterwards that even a poor person must recline this evening. And then it said that even the poorest person who gets his sustenance from the Tamchui, from Tzedakah, has to have no less than 4 glasses of wine. So that first Mishnah was a introduction to some basic principles of the Haggadah and of the night. And then the rest of the Mishnah of the chapter, we've seen until now, Bet, Gimel, and Dalet, 2, 3, and 4, they actually are the structure of the Haggadah. They are the Haggadah as it was 2,000 years ago. The second Mishnah said, Mazgulo Kos Rishon, they pour their first glass. That's the top of the left-hand column in the printing we have. Mazgulo Kos Rishon. And that is, of course, Kiddush. The third Mishnah is in the fourth line from the top of the page in the left-hand column. Hiviu Lefanav, right? They brought before him. And we had said that that is the ring before him of the materials for the Tibul Rishon, for the first dipping. And we had said that you dip with Chazeret in vinegar and salt water. But remember, the dipping in Chazeret, which means using the romaine lettuce for the first dipping, was really only a situation of emergency, if you didn't have any other vegetables. But if you had the proper vegetables, obviously, you would try to use anything but Chazeret, anything but romaine lettuce, for the first dipping, because the romaine lettuce will be used later for the second dipping, for the dipping that actually is the mitzvah of maror. And it's better not to use the maror for the first dipping if you can find something else. In any case, the last word of that fourth line from the beginning of left-hand column, Hiviu Lefanav, a second bringing before him, and this time was Matzah, the Chazeret, the Charoset, Ushnei Tavshilim. They brought before him the Matzah and the Chazeret, which is romaine lettuce for the Maror, and the Charoset, and the two Tavshilim, and the two dishes. We said those words, two dishes, probably weren't in the original of the Mishnah. That was formulated before Chorban Nabai. They were added afterwards, because the two dishes, when the Pesach and the Chagigah are no longer with us, because there's no Korbanot after Chorban Nabai, then we bring Shnei Tavshilim as a Zecher of the two Korbanot. And then the last line of this Mishnah ended with the word of a Mikdash, Hayu Mivim Lefanav Gufo Shel Pesach. And in the Mikdash, they used to bring before him the Gufo Shel Pesach, the carcass of the Pesach. We pointed out that the first word of that line that ends the Mishnah, Hayu Mivim, they used to bring, that word Hayu probably wasn't there in the original wording of the Mishnah. It just said, Uvim Mikdash Mivim Lefanav. In the Mikdash, they brought before him the Pesach. And meant to say, if you're in the Mikdash, geographically, you bring the Pesach. If you're not in the Mikdash geographically, but you're in some other city in Israel, then there is no Pesach. But after the Chorban HaBayit, they added the word Hayu. They used to bring, because after Chorban, no one brings, after Chorban HaBayit, no one brings the Pesach, there is no Pesach. The next Mishnah we did last week, Mishnah Dalet, beginning with the words, Mazgu Lo Chos Sheni. They poured from a second glass of wine. V'chan haben shoel aviv. And here the son asks his father. And we said last time that most probably any normal self-respecting son at this point, after they've eaten, right, they brought the food and they ate. That seems to be what they did in those days before the destruction of the temple. Any self-respecting son would realize that this kos of yain is being brought for Birkat HaMazon. Right? Birkat HaMazon. They ate already. And now it's time to bench. That's why the son asked the questions here, because they've brought the kos of bracha for Birkat HaMazon, and he notices they had matzah, not bread, and they had Korban Pesach and no other main dish, and they had this moreover, no other vegetables. So, he says, what's going on here? Why these special things? Why not the bread? Why not the other meat? Why just the barbecue? That's why the son asked Aaron. And additionally, we pointed out that what was done at the time of the Mikdash, most probably, when they brought their second glass of wine in order to say Birkat HaMazon, since they'd finished already, they did Akirat HaShulchan. They took away the table, the normal custom of taking away the table after you eat. And that was a certain sign that the meal is finished and that this kos is a kos of Birkat HaMazon. And therefore, the kid asked the questions, why was this meal so special? Only when the meal is finished can you ask, why was it so special? If the meal had still been in progress or hadn't taken place yet, you wouldn't know that it's a special meal if it didn't finish yet, if it didn't take place yet. And then we pointed out that when the temple was destroyed, most probably what happened is that after a number of years, we don't know if it's decades or it's centuries, the meal was taken away from its proper place and put later on in the Seder, because it was no longer the main mitzvah of the night, since there's no Korban Pesach. But what probably happened is, and we saw this in the Gemara, although the meal was removed from its proper place, the removal of the table was not removed, and they still continued taking away the table right before bringing the second glass of wine, even though there was really no logical reason to take away the table because they hadn't eaten yet. In the Gemara, the taking away the table before having eaten becomes now a reason to arouse, for the curiosity being aroused of the children. Why are you taking the table away? We haven't even eaten. Okay, so then we said, it says the kid asked the questions. If he is wise enough and perceptive enough to ask of his own, he asks. And it says at the end of the first line of this fourth Mishnah, Vim ein dat beven aviv milavdo. And if the son is not sensible enough or refined enough or sensitive enough to ask the questions on his own, he can ask whatever he wants. We saw in the Gemara, Abai said, why you take a table away? And Rabbi said, you've exempted us from saying manishtana. Anything the kid asks is enough. But if he doesn't ask anything, then his father teaches him to ask the four questions. And of course, we see from this that if the children are sensible enough and sensitive to ask their own questions, we don't have them read manishtana. That's only a bidiyavad. If they didn't ask themselves, then we teach them to ask. We point out to them what's special about this night. And indeed, as David said a few minutes ago, we notice that the questions in the Haggadah of today are different slightly than the questions here in the Mishnah, because first of all, the question about Korban Pesach was removed because it was no longer relevant, no Korban Pesach after Korban Abayit, and the question about reclining was put in its place. And secondly, the question that said, why do we usually dip once and tonight twice, was changed to, why do we usually dip not at all and tonight twice? And that's simply because the reality, the culinary reality, had changed. At the end of the Mishnah, after listing the four questions, this is the third line of the right-hand column in the next page of the Mishnah. Right, I turn the page. The third line of the right-hand column, right over here. In the middle of the line, Ulefi dato shel ben aviv milamdo, and according to the understanding of the son, his father teaches him. Which of course means that you're not reading something, because if you're reading, you can't calibrate it to the dato shel ben. Rather, you're telling him a story, and you tell it on the level of the ben. Matchil bignut umsayim b'shevach. You start with disgrace and end with a glory, meaning you start at the beginning of the story when the Jewish people were in sad straits. And there's a machloket what that means. It means sad straits physically we were slaves, or sad straits spiritually we were idolaters. and you misayim b'shevach, you end with glory, which means either receiving the Torah, that's the spiritual side, or the physical side, we were free men. So you're supposed to tell a story of a progression, not just say we're free, but rather how we got to be free and from where we came. How do you tell the story? It says, V'doresh mi'arami ovedavi ad shigmor kol ha'parsha kula. We darshan from Deuteronomy 26, beginning with the words Arami Ovedavi, until you finish the whole parsha. In other words, we're supposed to be darshaning, we're not supposed to be reading. We take those few four or five verses in Sefer Dvarim, which are the skeletal version of the Exodus, from slavery to the Exodus, perhaps also from spiritual slavery, from idolatry, and we do a drasha on those verses until we finish the whole parsha. We pointed out last time that in the Haggadah we have one example of a drasha on those verses, but it's certainly not meant to be read, because then it's no longer a drasha, it's a reading assignment. And if you're reading, it would be better to read from Shmot 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, all those different chapters. But it's just an example of a drasha that we should be darshaning. And we pointed out last time that there's a verse missing in the Haggadah from the drasha, because if the instruction is to do the drasha until you finish the whole parsha, it's emphasizing you have to get to the end. Whereas if we look in the Haggadah and compare it to the verse in Deuteronomy, the last verse in that section of verses is not in the Haggadah, and that's the verse that says that God brought us into a good land. And it's missing from the Haggadah. And apparently, all we can say is there must have been such a drasha in the time of the Bait, but it was deleted from the Haggadah because it was no longer relevant, because we weren't in a good land, we were in Galut. And I pointed out that there are a number of different alternative Haggadot you can find on the internet that do have a drasha on that last verse. That's last week. Here we are. Okay. Sit again.
Free from
Mitzrayim. Free from Mitzrayim. So now we're going to read the next Mishnah, the whole Mishnah. It's a long Mishnah, Mishnah Hey, the fifth Mishnah. So I'll read it slowly and I'll translate it very slowly. And then we'll go back, as we usually do, line by line and word by word. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer. Rabban Gamliel used to say, Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu, all that didn't say these three things, v'Pesach, on Pesach, lo yatsa yedei chovato, right, did not fulfill his obligation. Ve'elu hen, and these are them, colon, Pesach, matzah, maror, period. And then Rabban Gamliel, I gave it away, or perhaps I'm wrong, I would just take it back. And then the Mishnah goes on to say, Pesach, what does it mean when we say you have to say Pesach in this night? It means, Al Shum, because, literally Al Shum means on the name of, it means because, or in that, or given, Shepasach HaMakom Al Batei Avoteinu V'Mitzrayim, because Pesach skipped over Hamakom God Al Batei Avoteinu, over the houses of Avoteinu, the Mitzrayim, period. That's why I have to say Pesach this night, because God skipped over the houses of Avoteinu in Egypt. Matzah, why do you have to say Matzah tonight? Al Shum, because Shenigalu Avoteinu the Mitzrayim, because we're redeemed, right? The word Nigalu from Gaal, this is the passive, Nigal, because we redeemed our forefathers from Egypt. Maror, why do you have to say Maror tonight? Al Shum, because Shemiru HaMitzrim et Haye Avoteinu VaMitzrayim, because embittered the Egyptians the lives of Avoteinu VaMitzrayim. Bechol dor vador chayav adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatsa mi Mitzrayim. I'll translate that. B'chol dor v'dor, in each generation, right? In all generation and generation. Hayav adam, obligated a man, lirot et atzmo, to see himself. Right? To see himself. Ki'ilu. Ki'ilu means as if. As if he went out of Mitzrayim. And then it brings a verse to prove that. Shenemar, as it says, quote, V'gata levincha v'yom hahu lemor. And you should, higadata, like you should tell, like language of Haggadah. And you should tell your son v'yom hahu on that day, saying, and this is still the verse, v'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeiti Mitzrayim. This is hard to translate, there are different approaches, but what it means, at least one approach, because of this, God did li, for me, b'tzeiti, when I went out, tzeiti, right? Right? Yitziat Mitzrayim, Yitziah, tzeit, to go out, tzeiti, my going out of Mitzrayim. So the verse talks, it says, you should tell your son, in those generations, in that day, what God did for me. Right? So that proves that it's you that goes out of Egypt in each generation. And that's the basis for the statement of the Mishnah, that every generation must see himself as if he personally went out of Egypt. Then the Mishnah goes on. Lefichach. Lefichach means therefore. Anachnu chayavim lehodot. We are chayavim, obligated. And you see that the form chayavim with a nun at the end as opposed to a mem at the end, that's a Mishnaic form, as opposed to the biblical form which would be chayavim, or the modern form which would be chayavim.
It's still Hebrew.
Say it again?
It's still Hebrew, it's not Aramaic.
It's still Hebrew, right? Mishnaic Hebrew was influenced by Aramaic, and it uses the nun instead of the mem. Lefichach hanaknu chayavim lehodot lehalel lishabeach lefa'er leromeim lehader levarech la'alei ulkales. A long string of verbs.
Sounds familiar. From Yishtaba.
Yeah, it should sound extremely familiar. So it means, therefore we're obligated lehodot, language of todah, to thank, lehalel, to praise, language of, you know, the halel. Lishabeach, another word for praise. Lifa'er, to glorify. Liromeim, to uplift. Lahader, to praise, to glorify.
Yeah.
Livarek, to bless. La'alei. La'alei means to make, to rise up, to exalt, like language of Aliyah. Ulkales, which also means to glorify and to praise. Lemi sha'asa lavoteinu vilanu. To who? That did to our forefathers and lanu, and to us, livriyut. Et kol nisim elu, all these miracles. Utsianu me'avdut lechirut. He took us out from avdut lechirut, from slavery to freedom. Me'agon l'simcha, from melancholy, from sadness to simcha. What did you say? Which
one? Despair.
Despair. Yeah. To happiness. Me ever le yom tov. Me from mourning to a happy day. Yom tov. Right? Holiday. Me afila le or gadol. From darkness to great light. Me shibud le gula. From slavery to redemption. V'nomar le fanav. Hallelujah. And we will say before him, hallelujah.
What was the adjective of hanisim? Ha'elu? What is ha'elu?
Nisim. Ha'elu is these.
These.
So now I think what we should do, before we actually examine each line and word of the Mishnah, is to divide the Mishnah into its component parts. It's a long Mishnah, and if your Hebrew is not too good, you're probably not yet oriented in what's going on here. So let's just try and look at the Mishnah and divide it into some component parts. So let's just have some suggestions. Where might a new part begin, an old part end?
The first part would be the three things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's certainly true. And where does that end?
The Mitzrayim.
The Mitzrayim. So that would be line number 3, 4, 5. The fourth to last word of line 5 would be the end of a part, perhaps the first part, perhaps the end of the second part, but it's the end of a part, that's for certain. The end of the explanation of the reason for emphasizing the three Pesach symbols. Right, and then begins the matter of b'chol dor v'dor. In each generation one should see himself. And where does the matter of each generation should see himself end?
Also at Mitzrayim?
Also at the word, yeah, right.
It seems to end that.
Right. And that's line 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The second word, the ninth line, B'tzeiti Mitzrayim.
I would kind of disagree. Cause
disagree, okay.
It's like the, what we're going to call the third part is a continuation of the second part. It's like, because of the first part, we have to say the second part of the three parts. The third
right. Steve is pointing out that what we're about to call the third part begins with the word lefichach, therefore, which obviously is tied into something earlier. So you're right about that. But we can still call it a third part, I think, for a reason we'll say in 1 second. So it seems like the first part has to do with Rabban Gamliel's three Passover symbols, and the second part is the statement that every generation you have to see yourself, and that continues with the verse that proves it. And the third part, beginning with the word lefichach, therefore we have to thank, 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 bless, bless, praise, praise, praise.
Uplift.
Uplift, and let's say hallelujah. That's the third part of the Mishnah. I guess we're going to really ask the question now, that third part, its character is very different than anything we've had in the whole chapter before. What do I mean by that? It's a different, I almost said the answer. It's a different literary genre. What genre is it? It's not concise, right. It's not concise. But so what genre is it? What type of... What is it? In one word. Everyone knows.
Riz?
A more general word. Yeah, it's tefillah. It's liturgy.
Yeah.
Right? It's not an instruction of what you're supposed to say, how you're supposed to do it. It's actually the text of what you do say. Right? This is, it's really part of the Haggadah. Not an instruction of what to do, but it's actually what you say.
Even though it says, Lefichach anachnu chayavim?
I see what you're saying.
Right. So it's saying that we are obligated to...
So that's a good point. Is it telling us what we're supposed to do, or is it actually a quote of what we say? I see. So Paul made a good point. I was assuming it's actually a quote of what we say. We say, therefore we have to bless. But Paul's saying, no, it's not what we say. The Mishnah is telling us, therefore you have to bless, quote, and then say what comes after. No. So how would what you're saying, Paul, how would that work? What you're saying, I think, doesn't work because there's no... Because obviously... Well, I don't know, obviously. You
therefore,
tell me.
Therefore, we are obligated. Lehodota le'alana. So, I hear what you're saying. That it's telling. It, I don't know if it's direct. It is directing us.
I would think that if it's just directing us of what we should do, and then everyone goes and does it their own way, it wouldn't have used 8 different verbs for the praise. It would have said, "Therefore, you have to praise greatly." And it wouldn't do it their own way. If it lists all these verbs, it seems to me it's really a text of what we say.
Sometimes liturgy, and I have experience because I've spent a lot of time in the Reform movement and conservative, you know, and heard English. You know, a lot of times they do start off prayer saying, "Therefore, let us thank and bless." There are therefore, you know, we, you know, kind of almost, you know, starting off with direction that sounds like.
But would directions say, therefore we are obligated to praise, bless, glorify, exalt, uplift?
Well, I'm speaking more just to the introductory phrase that I can.
Where would the introductory phrase end? Where would it end?
Why does there have to be an end to it? Maybe it's all because to have a quote of to do some to praise. In other words, if you've instructed me to praise, I don't say to praise. I say praise. The Lama doesn't seem like it's.
Let me think about that for a second.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Yes, I do see. Therefore.
In other words, we haven't done it yet, right? We're being told to do
it. That's the question. Is this the instruction of what to do, or is this the doing?
Right. This is quoted in the Haggadah.
Right. But that doesn't prove what it was meant to be. Very good point.
In terms of the Yishtabach and the Sidur, it seems like we go on to praise after Duff gets after the Psukei de Zimra.
Okay, let me think about that.
And it's interesting.
It sounds like a general statement, and you know, for example, can a person who can't speak fulfill these? He can't. If he couldn't say it, then he wouldn't be able to fulfill this. So he's got to be able to do it somehow, to be able to show his praise to Hashem for these things and fulfill a mitzvah, because he went out of Mitzrayim also.
On the other hand, of what I said before, the lama doesn't necessarily have to be the infinitive of a verb, does it? Because sometimes lama means, we translate it as for, right? So it doesn't have to be what we would call the infinitive of the verb. Then it can be far praise, far uplifting.
I'm not sure how that would work here.
Well, I'm not sure how it would work either, but I'm only critiquing my first point that it's not necessarily an instruction to praise. You could say we're obligated.
It says, but no more the fanaf halavuka. We say that.
For thanking. I'm sorry?
Right, Ruby made a good point that the last three words are, and let's say before him hallelujah. It sounds like instruction. We're about to say the hallelujah, but we didn't say it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You guys are saying good things.
And what came first, the chicken or the egg? Was this taken from... Is the Yisht text that we have in Yishtabach taken from the Mishnah? Does the Mishnah take it from...
That we don't know.
Right.
Okay, I'm stumped. In other words, when I say stumped, I mean that I've now been shown that my assumption is not necessarily wrong, but it's not necessarily the only way of looking at it. I had been thinking of this as a liturgical text, but perhaps it's not. Perhaps it's just instruction. Which would mean that a certain pristine sense, it shouldn't be in the Haggadah. It is, but it perhaps shouldn't be. But it's just too poetic for instruction.
You're right.
Right.
That's right.
Okay, I don't know. I have to think about this more.
It seems inappropriately long if it's an instruction.
Yeah.
So if it's poetic, that would argue that it's more liturgy?
That my assumption was always that this is a piece of liturgy that got stuck into here. And the reason the liturgy says, therefore we are obligated to, is because liturgy wants to emphasize not just that we're praising, but we know why we are praising. That we connect between physical events and the words of praise we say. That was my assumption.
It's interesting, all of those verbs are Hebrew, and then the last one, lekales, I think is from Greek. But that's, I don't know.
What is your basis for saying it's from Greek?
The other ones all have shurashim in the Torah, but I don't think the shurash of... I know kalos in Greek is praise.
Oh, really? Ah.
In Greek.
Oh, okay.
How many do we have?
12? Yeah.
How many? I didn't count them.
But it's not
1,
Hebrew.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 in Hebrew and 1 in Greek.
Kalesh is not a Hebrew word. Not a Hebrew.
No, it's borrowed from Greek, I think.
Uh-huh.
I'm not an expert on Greek. But.
Okay, so we have some questions in the very basic structure of the Mishnah.
I mean, so far we've been given these statements that we're supposed to expound upon. You know, we're not supposed to just read. We're supposed to, you know, take and go on with, you know, within these three terms. You know, you're not supposed to just explain them, just, I would think, just with those short phrases, but expound upon that. So perhaps this is telling us that we should really
expound on the phrase
and concentrate on these. Yeah, I mean, you know, we should not just have one song of praise, but,
okay,
you know,
but again,
many varieties.
It seems that it's doing it more than just telling you to do it.
Right, but I mean, how else would it say it if it wanted to repeat it for emphasis?
Therefore, we are extremely obligated to praise.
Uh-huh. And it seems like a really big obligation. Like if it was telling us you're obligated to do this, it's like putting forth instruction. It seems like this is like a really high level, so it seems like it's more like a liturgy.
Yeah, right. If the instructions has 9 verbs of praise, then how much more so would it be in actually fulfillment? Okay, so let's go to the questions that I set forth, which may help us to find answers to some of the questions that are on the table.
I think it's saying, Rabbi, I'm saying one thing. I think it's saying that within the Hallel are all of these praises, and therefore we say the Hallel because that's going to cover all the praises.
I understand.
Do you have an extra question,
Sheik? Yes, I do. So the first question was, in what 2 possible ways can we understand how much of this Mishnah was actually said by Rabban Gamliel? So I'll let everyone think about that for 2 minutes.
Can I ask a question while we're saying that? It seems, from my limited experience, it seems in the introductory clause, the haya, is unusual.
Very good point. You've now skipped to question number...
Oh, sorry.
15 or something.
Okay, I'll reserve it then.
Good point. Good point.
The answer to this question is 3 possibilities, perhaps?
Perhaps there are 3. I saw 2.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering the same thing, actually.
Uh-huh. I don't see how we can prove one way or the other. But
so let's hear.
I guess my first reaction was after Elohim Pesach Matzah Marur.
Right, that's certainly possible.
Yeah.
Let's make sure everyone understands. It could be that the words of Rabban Gamliel come to a close at the end of the second line. I'll read the whole 2 lines. Rabban Gamliel Hayomer. Rabban Gamliel used to say, Kol shelo amar, shloshat barim elu, all that haven't said these 3 things, the Pesach, on Pesach, lo yatsa yedei chovato, didn't fulfill its obligation, ve'lohen, and these are those, Pesach matzah umaror, period. That could be the end of what he said. He has to say these 3 things. And then what comes later, which explains the 3 things, that perhaps is a commentator coming in the next generation, or a student explaining what he meant when he said, you have to say Pesach Matzah Maror. Or the explanation is what Rabban Gamliel also said. It's hard to know how far his words go.
Are statements in the Mishnah tend to be short?
Yes.
I thought. So that was one of the reasons I thought it may end after there.
So now you said there might be three possibilities.
Oh.
But it's the third.
The third would be after... Maror al shum shemarum hamitzrim et chayavotenu mitzrayim, period. And then the whole dovat.
So that's what I'm saying, right? That's
yeah.
That's the second possibility. What's the third possibility?
That it end.
Oh, I thought the first was that it ends after Pesach Matzah Maror.
That's the first one.
The second is that it includes the explanations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The third is that.
The third
I was going to say that it also includes the Bechol Dov Ador Chayav Adam L'Atzmo.
So that could be, but it would be a new statement.
No, yeah.
It could be the same person, but it's certainly not related. It doesn't fall under the heading.
Is it possible that Rabbi Gan, it was only remembered that he said there were three things that you had to do? And here they are. Somebody else is adding... And they're sort of saying, what were those three things?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know if that's possible. Because the language is...
The word Elu?
Right. Exactly. Because the language is anyone that didn't say these three things. It's as if he's almost pointing to them. Mm-hmm. And to say that we don't remember what they are, that's like to...
Yeah.
Cuts it off in the middle.
Is there a way...
But why would you do that? I mean, why would you say... That, I mean, it seems an awkward sentence.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he might have said there, he used to say there. Here are these three things, but people have a disagreement about how that sentence ended.
Mm-hmm. Let me think about that.
Stop. The whole door of the door is not him.
Probably not.
That's the Mishnah saying by itself.
You're probably right.
That's a different story because Rabbi Gamliel said what God did to us, to our Rabbi Seinu. To our forefathers. And the Mishnah says more. The Mishnah says that b'choldor b'dor, in each generation, we have to say that God did that for us, not only for the parents.
Right.
That's not Rab Gamliel. Rab Gamliel said Aboseinu, our forefathers, what God did to our forefathers. So I would say that b'choldor b'dor is a different story. It's not Rab Gamliel's saying.
Wow, I didn't realize that's something. Did you hear what Mr. Geller just said?
Yeah.
Mr. Geller just said there's actually a contradiction here.
Uh-huh.
Wow, I didn't notice that.
So that, where's the contradiction?
The first that I was saying.
Yeah.
Whereas...
He doesn't say that he did that for us.
Yeah.
And later the Mishnah says he did it for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Oh, very good.
You just woke me up, Mr. Geller. I didn't notice that. I've learned this 20, 30, 50 times.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that would indicate maybe a different author.
Hmm.
It's a different story.
Yeah.
A different, not Rabbi Gamliel,
a different
else.
Way, yeah. That this, God did that for us, we have to say that to our children. We have to remember that
he did
it for us.
That's very interesting.
You mean it takes it a step further?
Like he got us out from Mitzrayim. Like he got, if we have the feeling that he took us out from Mitzrayim.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not just the parents, the grandparents.
Now, when someone says something very, very insightful, I usually say that's a gold star. I don't feel comfortable giving you a gold star. You have lots of gold stars. Wow, that's interesting. Okay, and as far as what you were saying, David, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, that's why I asked about the word haya, because I thought maybe that's a hint about also that it's a partial remembrance.
Okay,
or a remembrance
so
of a partial
it up,
statement.
Let's talk about that word haya. Let me see where in the questions that I go into that word. It was much later down, but we will find it and then go into it. Where did I bring that word? Anyone who finds that word...
Maybe just meant to.
Is it four? What is that word?
The word haya means used to, right?
No, number four, concerning the...
Yeah, is that it?
Oh, yeah, it's right here. Okay, it's right close up. Okay, very good.
It can also mean, sometimes it means a future tense.
But not here?
No.
Rabbi Gamliel will say?
Omer, what's Omer?
Omer is a present participle, means says, right?
No.
So let's go to question four, since David brought it up. Concerning the opening attribution, in other words, the statement, Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer, where else in this chapter have we seen the word Hayu in a very similar usage? Right, Hayu, Haya.
In Gimel for the...
right.
Bayit. But it's spelled differently. Is it the same word?
Well, it's plural and singular, but it's the same word. So it says at the end of Mishnah Gimel, in the Mikdash, they used to bring before him the Gufo Shel Pesach. And we pointed out that in many manuscripts of the Mishnah, it says, in the Mikdash they bring, not in the Mikdash they used to bring. Because really, we have many indications that this chapter of Mishnah was formulated already when the temple was still standing. And it says, in the Mikdash they brought before him the Gufo Shel Pesach, and it was a geographical distinction, as I said half an hour ago in the review. If you're in the Mikdash, they brought it. If you're not in the Mikdash, but rather in Eilat or in Haifa, then they didn't bring it. It's geographical, and it's not chronological, because it's during the Bayit. But after the Bayit was destroyed, they added the word Hayu, so the statement now becomes a chronological statement. Today we don't bring the Korban Pesach, but they used to bring it. The same thing is probably true in our Mishnah, that the original Mishnah used to say Rabban Gamliel Omer.
Used to say, used.
No. That word was not there in the original Mishnah text. Rabban Gamliel Omer.
Omer, yeah.
Okay? It became Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer after Korban HaBayit. What changed after Korban HaBayit?
No Pesach.
So therefore, Rabban Gamliel wouldn't say, if he were alive today, he wouldn't say that anyone who doesn't say these three things doesn't fulfill his obligation, because you don't have to say these three things, you have to say two of the three. Now I know in our Haggadah we have it anyway, all three of them, I understand. But I'm trying to figure out the original intention here, and apparently the secondary editor, the editor that added the word Haya, right, was telling us in our day, we don't have to say Pesach.
And speaking of chronological order, I am curious as to why the order is repeated, Pesach, Matzah, Morar, you know, and then Pesach, Matzah, Morar. I mean, I would think it would be Morar, Matzah, Pesach, or Morar, Pesach,
Matzah. Why?
Well, because, you know, if you're going to go from the suffering to redemption, you know, or if you're going to go through the story, you know, the slavery precedes
the order.
You know, the Passover and the matzah.
It's a good point, but there's an answer to that.
Okay.
Does anyone have the answer to that?
I have an idea as an answer. I mean, this is probably wrong, but I mean, my idea is that in the time of the temple, when they brought out the Kohanim that were going to bring the Korban Pesach, were also going to take part in the Seder, would bring the Pesach, and then so the Pesach, I mean, they would eat it and go through the other symbols, and that's why that would be early.
But there's a deeper reason.
It's in the Chumash.
It's in the Chumash. Let's open up the Chumash, the chapter 12 of Shemot.
Did he pay you to raise that question?
I'm a foil.
I was thinking that plant. Question.
What page is that?
It's on page 350.
I think there's a lot to learn from this. You know, why do you have to say Pesach first?
Okay.
It's an explicit verse on page 350, which is Perek Yud Bet, the 12th chapter, and it's verse Chet, verse 8. V'halu et habasar b'layla hazeh sli esh u'matzot al morim yochluhu. Why does that verse prove?
First says Bosa. It's
the order.
And then it says Matzah.
You're right, but it's more than that. It's not just the order here.
Yeah.
It's something a little bit more subtle.
Yeah. the order is more right for the meat, eat the meat first.
You're right, but it's still more than what. How do you define the mitzvah? What is the mitzvah that's mentioned in this verse?
Roasting of Pesach.
Korban Pesach.
And it's eating.
Right.
What's the mitzvah?
Eating the.
I shall eat the flesh on that night.
Eat the three things together.
You're right, but not exactly. The mitzvah is to eat the Korban Pesach with Matzah and Maror. Okay. Matzah and Maror are not separate mitzvot.
Oh.
They're accompaniments to the Korban Pesach. So much so that there's an opinion in the Gemara that if there's no Korban Pesach, there's no mitzvat matzah.
Oh.
Or maror. Right? We've been talking about the fact that with Korban HaBayit there's no Pesach. But some opinions say there's no matzah. Because look at the mitzvah. It's to eat the Korban Pesach with the matzah. So that's probably the reason why Rabban Gamliel brings the Pesach first.
Elsewhere it does say eat matzah.
Exactly.
In the Chumash, but...
Right. The reason why we eat matzah today is because this verse says we shouldn't eat matzah today. But there are other verses that lists matzah as a separate mitzvah. But according to this mitzvah, according to this pasuk, matzah is only an accompaniment to Pesach.
But we don't... Oh, sorry.
Okay. So the Mishnah was written when the temple was still built, right?
Apparently.
So, standing. Okay, so why isn't it biblically the obligation to eat the three things, not to say, talk about the three things?
The obligation certainly begins with eating them. You're certainly right.
But why is it? Why does Rabbi Gamliel say that you should say it? It seems like it's a.
That's a very good question. He's not saying you don't have to eat it. He's saying that you also have to say. But the question in my mind is, and I put this someplace on the sheet, when Rabban Gamliel says all that didn't say these three things didn't fulfill his obligation, which obligation is he talking about? What obligation is it you didn't fulfill by not saying it? Because if I ate the foods, I would think that I did the mitzvah. Right? Obligation is to eat the Pesach. I ate the Pesach.
To teach.
Where does it say to teach in the Torah?
In the Shema.
He got a televimcha. In other words, there's a mitzvah tonight to tell your child. So I would say what we just said in the form of putting forth two possibilities. When Rabban Gamliel says that anyone who didn't say these three things didn't fulfill his obligation, I ask the question, which obligation are you talking about? There's two possibilities. Either Rabban Gamliel feels that the saying is part and parcel of the obligation of eating, and the obligation he's talking about is the obligation to eat Pesach Matzah, or you didn't fulfill it unless you said orally what the meaning is of what you're eating, or Rabban Gamliel says, meant something else. It's not the obligation of eating that hasn't been fulfilled by the not saying. It's a different obligation of higadat levincha. The separate obligation of the story cannot be fulfilled except by telling the story in reference to the physical symbols on the table.
That second explanation seems more logical because, let's say somebody can't speak, they can't fulfill the mitzvah of the Seder. Right, they if they can somehow explain the story with pictures or, you know,
it says higata, says to tell, and it's
so
I don't
doesn't fulfill the mitzvah this,
it could very well be that you're anus, you are not obligated if you can't speak because you don't have the possibility of doing it. So now
tell the story with all kinds of toys and symbols.
But I look, I'm sure there are response on the subject, but do you fulfill the obligation without speaking? As far as I know, the answer is no, you have to speak.
Even sign language?
I don't know, I think. It says higata. So the question is, what is the definition of higata?
Right.
Is it necessarily through speech, or could there be other ways? I'm certain there are many responsa, modern responsa. Do it.
I want to suggest, whether rightly or wrongly, that Sam is touching on what I was trying to say before, that haya can mean to, can mean passing, can mean future. It can mean now in the Beis Hamikdash we have the Pesach, we have the Matzah, we have the Maror, right? We're eating it, right? So why do we have to say it? He was probably foreseeing the future through Ruach HaKodesh. Rabbi Gamliel for sure had Ruach HaKodesh.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, whatever Ruach HaKodesh means, I'm sure he had it. I want to suggest that it's touching on the future without the Pesach Matzah Maror.
Okay, I don't know what you mean.
Okay.
That there was more of an emphasis on explaining as time progressed.
And we lost them. Yeah.
Can
is
I
this new?
Yeah. I want to continue with something that was just brought up. With the Hayah and with what Sam brought up. Now listen to this. If we have on the table a legitimate question, what is the obligation that is fulfilled or not fulfilled by saying or not saying Pesach Matzah Maror? Is it the obligation of the foods themselves, or is it the obligation of Higadata? Okay. Then let's put that question on the table and look at it through the prism of the word Hayah, which we just said was probably not in the original text of the Mishnah, but was added after Chorban HaBayit. Why was it added? Apparently because we're being told by the person who added the word that when Rabban Gamliel said what he said at the time of the Mikdash, he wouldn't say it had he been alive today. He, Hayaome, used to say, but today you don't have to do what he said. And I assume what it means, you don't have to say these three things, you don't have to say at least one of the three, the Pesach, because it's no longer relevant. There's no Pesach. Now, if I say that after Chorban HaBayit, you no longer have to mention the Pesach, that seems to assume one of the two answers to the question of what is the source of the obligation of this saying. Because if the obligation of saying Pesach Matzah Maror stems from the mitzvah of Higata, well then why would it change after Chorban HaBayit? It's the same telling of the story. But if the obligation to say Pesach Matzah Maror stems from the obligation to eat these things, then if the eating is no longer mitzvah because there's no Korban Pesach, then the mitzvah of saying, being a category of the mitzvah of eating, is no longer there. And since our later editor adds the word Hayah, meaning that the obligation is no longer an obligation, I assume that seems to teach us that the source of the obligation was not in the mitzvah of Higadata, which doesn't change, but it's in the mitzvah of Pesach, which did change.
Could we say maybe the Pesach was not on the table to point to anymore?
It wasn't, because it didn't exist anymore.
So that's why the word Hayah got inserted.
I'm not sure you're giving a different perspective?
Yes, he is.
Well, I don't know if this is true. I'm saying maybe the mitzvah was to point to the food on the table and explain each one.
I see. In other words, you're saying that perhaps the mitzvah of saying does derive from Higata.
Yeah.
But Higata is changing because the props aren't on the table.
Right. I was thinking. I'm agreeing because that's...
That's what you're thinking.
That's what we do. Uh-huh. We point it out to
right.
the kids.
Yeah, except we don't really point to the Pesach offering because we don't really have that. We have the memorial of it.
Yeah. I think it must have been reference to Higata because, look, I mean, forget after the temple. Just when they were eating it, it existed, the Korban Pesach, and he was saying that you had to explain... That he was saying that both existed
together.
Contemporaneously. That there was the eating, but that wasn't all. It was, you hadn't completed it when you had just eaten. You had to also explain. So that must
okay.
You know. I'm not sure what you're. I'm saying that in the time of the temple, when they would eat the Pesach Matzah Maror together, Rabbi Gamliel was also used to say that you had not fulfilled your obligation unless you also explain.
Right.
So that's saying that just the eating was not enough to fulfill the mitzvah. That there was the eating that fulfilled this mitzvah, but that the other
mitzvah of saying,
a saying also had to be fulfilled by the saying. So then, that. So then we could also say, we could say that later after the temple, then the saying still exists independently. I mean, that's not.
So then, why add the word Hayah?
Again, yeah. Steve has a possible answer to that question.
Can I catch my answer now? Or answer?
Well, Steve said it. Right. Steve said it. Because when makes some
when,
sense.
Because when first. Because.
Oh, I have an idea.
The nature of when somebody's eating, of course, is to just rest, to eat, and just to eat, like we know with the bagels, or just eat, right? Not to talk, you know, just to eat. So you have to say, you have to not just eat, but when you're not eating these things, right? So we don't have, it's easier to talk about it. When you're just eating it, you have to be told if you're eating them, you have to be told. Now stop, don't just eat. You have to explain also.
Yeah.
But when you're not eating them, so
the explanation's
on. The explanation's easier because there's nothing.
I don't know. It's easier. Why would you talk about something that's not there? That's
there's nothing because when you're eating. The tendency is to just...
I understand, but why would you think to talk about a Pesach and not talk about McDonald's if there's no Pesach on the table? And my forefathers never did it for the past hundreds of years. We never did such a thing. Why? How would I know to talk about it if I'm not told to talk about it?
It must have been difficult, you know, then to talk about it when you're eating rather than when you're not eating. It's not as...
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question, I think, of why talk about it?
I guess I would now argue the other side, that it is directly related to the eating of the Pesach. That Haggadah, you know, could be related to lots of different things throughout the serving. You know, the dipping, the reclining, you know, all of the things that we do Here, Rabbi Gamliel was saying that when you were eating it, that you also had to explain it, that you couldn't just eat it, and under that explanation, it would be that now that you don't eat it, you don't have to explain that part.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you conform this idea that we're to eat the three together with the earlier Mishnahs?
To explain what you mean?
Things are brought before you. It doesn't seem to be
so. In the previous Mishnah Gimel, we talked about the things being brought before, mm-hmm. and in the last word of the first line of Mishnah Gimel,
uh-huh.
he viu lefanav, they brought before matzah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the matzah, and the chazeret, which is the maror,
mm-hmm.
and the charoset, and the word shnei tavshilim, we said, were not there in the time of the Mikdash.
That's my question.
But then, Vafal pi shein haruset mitzvah, even though chazur not mitzvah, Rabbi Lazar bar tzadoku mer mitzvah, and then it says, v'mikdash, in the Mikdash, they brought in the Pesach. So what do you have? What did they bring in? They brought in the Pesach, matzah, haruset, and Pesach.
Uh-huh.
They brought
everything
together. And according to the verse we read in the Torah, that the mitzvah is to eat the Pesach with the two things, so the mitzvah is literally to eat the Pesach accompanied by matzah and maror. Okay. So let's go forward in the Mishnah. We put a lot of different important things on the table. Goodness gracious, we're still in question two, and the morning is gone. And I said to myself last night, well, this class is just too... going to go too quick. Okay, so question number two was...
You always underestimate our ability to confuse things.
But it's not just this class. My general tendency is to underestimate how deep things get. What is the context of the beginning of this Mishnah? When is one supposed to say Shlosha Dvarim Elu? What's going on
when Rabban Gamliel suddenly says, or the editor suddenly puts Rabban Gamliel here saying, you have to say these three things. Where are we in the Seder? What stage are we at? What's going on?
Supposedly after the...
Are we concluding Magi?
Ah, so we're in Magid. And are we concluding Magid? That's we don't have to look there. You can look in the Mishnah. This is just to remind us of things we've said many times, that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, when he edited the Mishnah, he divided into starim, six starim, divided into mesechtot, divided the mesechtot into prakim, but the prakim he did not divide into further units. The fact that Mishnah 5 is Mishnah 5 is a quirk of some very later editor. We should not make the mistake of thinking that Mishnah 5 is a unit separated from what came earlier. It's not. And to understand Rabban Gamliel, we have to read him as a continuation of the previous line, which was an earlier Mishnah, Mishnah 4, but it's really part of the same literary unit. So what we had read was, at the end of Mishnah Dalet, Matchil b'gnut umsayem b'shevach, right? You begin with disgrace, end with glory. That gives you the bookends, and then it tells you what's in the middle of the bookends. B'doresh, and you make a drashan, Arami Oved Avi, until you finish the whole parsha, Rabban Gamliel Hayomer. As Rabban Gamliel is giving you further content of that fulfillment of mitzvat magid, content of what goes between the gnut, the disgrace, and the shevach. Part of the mitzvah is to be doresh, from Arami Oved Avi. Adds Rabban Gamliel, it's not just drasha. There's also an element in which you actually look at what's on the table and point out the meaning of things. It might even be, and this is really getting radical, but it might be that there's a machloket here. Because Rabban Gamliel Omer, when anything is attributed to an individual rabbi, usually there's a machloket. Right? So here, one of two possibilities. Either Rabban Gamliel disagrees with what came above in a minimal fashion, which is, what came above was, you have to be Doresh. Rabban Gamliel disagrees only in the sense of, he says, you have to also add these three things. That's a minimalist way of looking at the machloket. A maximalist way would be that Rabban Gamliel says, you don't have to Doresh. It's only a matter of the three things.
Well, we know that it says that you haven't fulfilled your obligation unless you've what? I forget what it says. Pesach, Matzah, Mar.
Right. But so the question is, you haven't fulfilled your obligation, agreed. But does that mean you have to add on to the drasha these three things? Or does it mean these three things are in lieu of the drasha? There's two different approaches here to the way the seder is to be conducted.
Knowing where it is in the Haggadah, I would say, in addition to...
Right, the Haggadah is a conglomeration of everything.
Right.
Right.
This doesn't seem to be touching...
And for the experience, or for the experiential aspect, I would say that in addition to the Doresh, because we're trying to maximize, or we're trying to connect to the past.
But you're assuming what you want to prove.
Right.
Perhaps Rabban Gamliel had a whole different understanding of what goes on tonight. A much shorter Seder, by the way.
I mean, in English, the word fulfill, I think, I mean, and that, it sounds in the context of, as it's complementing, as rather than mm-hmm. rather than supplementing.
But also,
complementing rather than replacing, did you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supplementing okay. is what I said, but yeah, but rather than replacing.
But it seems as though there's another possible disagreement that could be mm-hmm. getting stated by Rabbi Gamliel, and that is, if you because I had the earlier question in my mind that I didn't say yet, which is, why is this being said here? Why isn't it being said back here, where you bring these things to the table?
Uh-huh.
You would think that that's because by the time you get down here, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Why didn't we say it back here? And he may be saying, maybe the disagreement is really about when you say these things. Is that possible?
I would take what you just said mm-hmm. and just say that it's at the end because it's a minor opinion.
Uh-huh.
It's, we gave the whole flow of things, and then here's another approach at the end.
Because you would think that, especially if it has to do, if it's, the truth is, if it's not to be done when you're eating them,
then
that's a commentary also on your earlier question. Is it part of the mitzvah of eating?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you're doing it after you've eaten them, well, it can't be.
Right. Right.
Right.
It
can't.
Right.
It has to be touching.
And so if it's in order, if this is part of the order,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't fit that thesis really.
It has to be touching on Sipur Yisias Mitzrayim, the actual telling of the story of going out of Mitzrayim. Bishvio Pasa, it doesn't even talk about the mitzvahs here. Rabbi Gamliel is not talking about the mitzvahs of Pesach, Matzah, where he's talking about, we have to say it because of Pasach, Shem passed over, Matzah because we were redeemed, Marah because of the bitterness. Right, it's like that story. It's telling about the mm-hmm. the mitzvah of telling over the story.
Yep.
If we don't tell over these three things, if we don't do that mitzvah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A lot of interesting things are going around this table. I just thought of something based on many things I've just heard, especially on what Mr. Galler said 5 minutes ago. Look at this. Look at this. If you look at the end of Mishnah Dalet, the very end of Mishnah Dalet had said Doresh, right? The end of Mishnah Dalet, which is the page mm-hmm. you're looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
It said you make this drasha on the verses in Deuteronomy. And we had pointed out last time that those verses in Deuteronomy are all written in the first person. Uh-huh. What God did to us. Right? And then we get to Rabbi Gamliel, who says, Avotenu, 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 mm-hmm. which is third person. And then comes Bechol Dor Vador, which goes back to the first person. Mm-hmm. Anyone not with me? I'll say it again. Okay. So then I say to myself that the phrase Bechol Dor Vador obviously is going back to the drasha. It's leapfrogging over Rabbi Gamliel and it's explaining the drasha. The drasha is a matter of Bechol Dor Vador in every generation, which just goes to show you how much Rabbi Gamliel is really a separate opinion. It's in parentheses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Devarim was just stuck in there in the middle of some other thinking.
And it's like a alternative opinion to what you say this night.
Could be supplementary.
What was the chapter
right,
verse?
And you just told me supplementary means to supplement in the mm-hmm. sense of take the place of.
No, mm-hmm. no, means to add to.
No, that's complementary, isn't it? Like to no, complement well, is to add to.
Supplement well, they, is to add.
In this context, okay. they're not that different.
Okay, so the question is Rabbi Gamliel complementary or replacing?
Yeah.
And I'm suggesting perhaps he's replacing.
Disagreeing.
Disagreeing.
When we found that part in Devarim, what chapter and verse is it?
Can I 26, verse 5.
Okay.
26, verse 5. Okay, so we will go on.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
I'm just wondering. I don't know the answer to my question. Does it say anywhere in the... we said Deuteronomy, we read all the Parsha. Does it mention anywhere in there Pesach or Maror?
No. Not at all.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Not at all.
That's
right.
What I was just...
Remember, the context there is Mikra Bikurim.
Mm-hmm.
What the farmer says when he mm-hmm. brings mm-hmm. his first fruits and he tells the whole story of Jewish history.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of hijack that story for our purposes on Pesach.
Right. That's why I was going to look at mm-hmm. it and saying that then... Maybe Gamliel saying to complement it, we also have to mm-hmm. take this from Devarim and those three, make sure
yeah.
those three things are included.
It could be complementary. It could be replacementary. Okay. So we're going to go on. We have just gone through question 3, which pointed out that Rabban Gamliel is attributed to Rabban Gamliel, so it might be an argument. And we did question 4, which pointed out the word hayu, haya. And question 5 is something we talked about. It was about the fact that apparently the editor in the center, Rabban Gamliel, is no longer relevant. It's a hayat, something in the past. And that's question 6 also. Mm-hmm. Question 7. Yeah. All right, so question 7 now. How is this change in relevancy? In other words, that apparently we're being told that Rabban Gamliel's use of the word Pesach is only a hayat. It's not in the present. How is that related to what we saw in the last class as far as the historical developments and the content of the 4 questions? Where in the 4 questions do we also see a historical development that, well, I'm giving it away to you, but what was taken out of the 4 questions? Pesach, right?
Right.
So just like his history took out of the 4 questions the 4 Pesach, so the editor added the word Hayah with Rabban Gamliel to say that it's no longer relevant to say everything he said we have to say. And I assume that it means is you no longer have to say the matter of Pesach. So now we understand. The kids don't ask about it, and you don't answer about it. Right? Of course, again, today, the kids don't ask about it, but we tell them anyway. Okay. So now question 8. What would seem to be the meaning of the word amar as Rabban Gamliel uses it? Right, he says, Rabban Gamliel haya omer, kol shelo amar. All that didn't amar, these 3 things didn't fulfill his obligation, and they are Pesach, Matzah, Maror. What does amar mean?
Probably Doresh.
Very good. Right.
I agree.
It doesn't mean that to say the words Pesach Matzah Mort means to explain them.
Right.
Very good. Very good. And that just again goes on to say there are 2 different perhaps alternative rashas on the table. One is the Arami Oved Avi, the other is the Pesach Matzah Maror.
And I thought I was fulfilling the mitzvah the whole time by saying Pesach Matzah Maror.
Apparently not.
There's a nice little paragraph there that you've read.
All
right.
You're okay.
So now, question 9. What 2 possibilities might there be in understanding the chovah that is fulfilled to the statement of Shlosha Dvarim? We did that already. Is it the chovah of Magid or the chovah of the Pesach Matzah Maror? And then question 10. What are the verses in Exodus concerning Pesach and Matzah respectively that Rabban Gamliel is referring to? Okay, so that requires some thought. He says you have to say these 3 things, and he gives us explanations. On Pesach we have to say because God skipped over our forefathers' houses, and concerning Matzah we have to say because God redeemed us. So what is his foundation in the Chumash? That's my question. Now I'll give you a hint. Someone asked this question 1,000 years ago and he wrote the answers into your Haggadah. So we can either look in the Haggadah or we can look in the Chumash. It's easier to look in the Haggadah. It's harder to not look in the Haggadah and to find it in the Chumash. But I guess since you already took the Haggadot and time is late, we can open the Haggadot. Alright. So, the Haggadah, we're looking at Pesach Matzah Maror, right? And it begins with Pesach.
Page 21.
I have a different edition. Is it page 21?
I think we're 21. Yeah.
So it says Pesach shehayu avotenu ochlim bizman shebeit hamikdash haya kayam. al shuma, right? The Pesach that used to our forefathers eat at the time that Beit Mikdash was in existence, al shuma. Why? Because of what? Colon. Al shum shepasach hakadosh baruch hu al batei avutina b'mitzrayim shenemar. Because of that skip the Holy One over the house of forefathers in Mitzrayim, as it says. But before we get to as it says, I want everyone to see the relationship between the text in the Haggadah and the text in the Mishnah. If you do it with two fingers, one on the Mishnah, one on the Haggadah, you see that it's really fascinating. So if you go to the Haggadah...
What page you get?
Yeah, page 21 on the
bottom. If you go to the Haggadah, the beginning of the... I'm sorry, go to the Mishnah, the beginning of the third line of our Mishnah, it says Pesach. Right? And then put your finger on that, and then put your finger on the Haggadah, on the word Pesach. So in our Mishnah, it says Pesach al shum shepasach. And in the Haggadah, it says Pesach. And then there's a whole nine words, until you get to it says al shum. What happened is that the words in the Haggadah, Pesach al shum, are written in the Haggadah, but there are eight words that are interpolated, thank you, into that sentence. What are the words that are interpolated? Shahayu avotenu ochlim bisman shebeit mikdash hayakayam, that our forefathers used to eat when the temple was in existence. In other words, it's taking the Mishnah and expanding on the word haya. Remember the Mishnah added the word hayad used to be, and it adds that word again, but it gives a whole sentence around it. Used to at the time when the Beit Mikdash was Kayam. But it's all an interpretation of the Mishnah. And then it says, Al Shum Shepasach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Batei Avotinu Mitzrayim. That's word for word in the Haggadah. The reason is because God passed over our forefathers' homes in Mitzrayim. It changes the use of the name of God. In the Haggadah it says Makom, and in the Haggadah it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? But it's the same God, I hope, right? And the Haggadah adds a verse. Rabbi Gamliel didn't mention a verse. How did Rabbi Gamliel know that God skipped over our forefathers' houses? So the verse says, I'm reading in the Haggadah now, Shenemar, V'martem Zevach Pesach Hu Ladonai, Asher Pasach al Batei Bnei Yisrael b'Mitzrayim b'Nogfo et Mitzrayim v'et Bateinu Yitzil v'Kod Am b'Shtachavu. The whole verse that says, and you should say that this is the sacrifice of the Pesach to God, who skipped over the houses of Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim when he was destroying Mitzrayim, and our houses he saved, and the whole people bowed down and prostrated themselves. Fine. We're going to go back to this another 5 minutes. But before we do, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, before we do, let's do the same thing for the other symbols on the matzah and the maror. So the Haggadah says concerning the matzah, matzah zo sh'anu achlim al shuma, and again that's an expansion of what the Mishnah says, matzah zo al shuma. It says matzah sh'anu achlim. As opposed to what it said in the Pesach, the matzah that our forefathers ate, here it says the matzah that we eat, because we eat it. And here, the author of the Haggadah doesn't repeat the words of the Mishnah, but it changes them. The Mishnah said concerning matzah that we have to say it's because our forefathers were redeemed. But the Haggadah makes it more explicit. It says it's because the dough of our forefathers couldn't rise until God revealed himself and redeemed them. Shenemar. And it brings the verse that they couldn't make bread as they were running out of Mitzrayim. So it's interesting that the author of the Haggadah didn't think that Rabban Gamliel was explicit enough. And it expands. It's not just that we eat matzah because God redeemed us, but specifically because there wasn't time for the bread to rise. And I don't see an argument here. I just see an expansion. Then the maror. And the maror, the author of the Haggadah, really just quotes from the Mishnah and adds a verse. what verse does he offer the Haggadah add? So it says, Nagadah maror zeh, shanu ochlim, this maror that we're eating, al shuma, why? Because of what? Al shum shemiraru hamitzrim et hayev, otenim mitzrayim, because the mitzrim embittered our lives in Mitzrayim, I'm sorry, embittered the lives of our forefathers, as it says, v'yimaru et hayehem, and they embittered their lives with avodah kasha, etc., etc., etc. Fine. I guess we could go into this now.
Yeah. I was just going to say, usually when we, my recollection is when we explain matzah, when we, okay, am I confessing to not doing a good job here, but when usually when we explain matzah, we say, no time to rise, had to hurry, or we say, the bread of affliction, it's the bread that slaves had to eat, was poor bread. This is saying something different. This saying the reason we have to mention is because it's a symbol of the redemption. It's a different statement.
I'm not following. And in fact, you gave two explanations of the matzah. Mm-hmm. I thought that one of them is what we say in the Haggadah. So I didn't follow something.
Well,
you said.
A piece of what's said in the Haggadah is that it's a symbol of redemption. And in fact, that's what it says in the Chumash, I think. Safeguard the matzah, for on this day I have taken your legions out of the land of Egypt. Mm-hmm. That's redemption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say to remember that you had to hurry. It doesn't say because it's the bread of affliction. It says a remembrance that I took you, redeemed you. Those are three different statements, I think. That's what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
And we usually speak of two, but not the third. In our story, if you said to a kid who's gone to Akiba, what's the matzah for? Why do you have unleavened bread?
Mm-hmm.
I think they say one of those first two things. Had to hurry, no time to rise, or it's the bread poor people ate.
So my,
that's all I'm saying. I'm just noting that there's more to the symbolism than I had been conscious of till just now. That's all I'm saying.
So I assumed, and I think that I still assume this, that the matter of our being sent out of Egypt quickly so that the Britons have time to rise, well, that's what the Torah says, right? And that's why we eat the matzah, that's what the Torah says. And therefore, matzah is the symbol of freedom. It reminds us how we reached our freedom through a quick exodus, and therefore it's the symbol of freedom. Those aren't two different things.
Well, I'm just in this place. It doesn't mention quick. You have to see what it says in the Hebrew, and maybe I'm missing it, but the matter of no time to rise isn't a piece of that recitation. It's just redemption.
Okay,
you're just saying elsewhere it says something else.
Yeah, I just think that's a shorthand.
Okay.
I remember becoming aware of this because I remember always as a kid thinking that I had to eat matzah because it was almost like, you know, denying yourself for a week, you know, to relive the Exodus story, you know, as though it was something you had to suffer with. But, you know, as an adult, when I heard this lecture, I remember Rabbi Dabrowski talking about it, and then I kind of got this sense of it as bread of freedom, rather than bread of suffering, bread of freedom. One of the things was it represented being able to rise above circumstances, that it was that matzah, unlike bread, it doesn't change when it's affected by the heat, you know, that matzah, you know, and he was making analogy to ego, and that this is something that's more independent, and
yeah, that's Hasidut.
Yes, right. And I like, because it gave me a sense, you know, more, you know, savoring the matzah, thinking of it as redemptive. You know, after all, we went into Egypt for bread.
Right, right.
And here we are leaving because we don't need their bread, we need God's bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Okay.
A different explanation.
So.
Not so really because of.
But there is a difference. I mean, David's right. I mean, I had always seen it as the as that.
Okay. I want to go on now to looking at the Rambam, who will help us to look more insightfully at the verses that we just saw in the Haggadah. So we have the Haggadah still open.
Where's the Rambam?
The Rambam is on the back side of the Shira Gerat. Back side of the question sheet. And it says here, Rambam Hilchot Hametzu Matzah Perek Zayin. And then in boldface type, about 12 lines down, it says Rambam Hilchot Hametzu Matzah Perek Chet. And one is the 7th chapter, one is the 8th chapter. And I could have studied a few halakhot from each of these two chapters. But I have to explain the difference between the two chapters. In chapter 7, Perek Zayin, the Rambam gives instructions for how to do the Seder. In chapter 8, he gives you his Haggadah. Okay, and that's going to be important in what we're about to look at. So again, chapter Zayin are instructions for how to do the Seder, and chapter 8 is the Seder. Those are two different things. So, says the Rambam in chapter Zayin, Halakha Hei. Okay, we're reading? Kol mi shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu, b'leil hamisha asar, translation, all that didn't say these three things on the night of the 15th, lo yatsa yidei chovato, didn't fulfill his obligation, ve'lohem, and these are they. And this, of course, that's the Mishnah, right? Little few words. Pesach matzah maror. Last word of the first line. Pesach al shum shepasach hamakom baruch hu. Pesach because of that skipped God, blessed be He, over batei avoteinu b'mitzrayim, shenemar. V'amartem zevach Pesach hu l'shem, v'gomer. As the verse says, and you should say that it's the Paschal sacrifice. No, the same verse that's in our Haggadah, the Rambam has it. Fine. Everything seems simple. Morarim. Why do we have to say maror? Al shum shemiru amitzrim et chayev utinim mitzrayim. We have to say the maror because they made our lives bitter in Mitzrayim. Matzah. Al shum shenigalu. Matzah because we were redeemed. V'dvarim elu kulan hen nikraim Haggadah. And all of these things are called Haggadah. They're called the telling. Fine. Now let's go to chapter 8. And it begins there, reading in Halacha Dalet. Machzir Shulchan Lefanav, and you return the table before you, right? The table is taken away. Vomer, and you say, Pesach Zesh Anu Achlim, this Pesach that we eat, Al Shum Shepasach HaMakom HaBatei Avoteinu B'Mitzrayim, because skipped God over the house of our forefathers in Egypt. Shenema, as the verse says, V'amartam Zevach Pesach Hu L'Hashem, as the verse says, and you should say that this is the sacrificial Pesach for God. And then he says, "Umagbiya hamaror," and you pick up the maror, biyado in his hand. Vomea maror zesh anu achlim, this maror that we eat, ashum, it's because of shemeru mitzrim et hayevuteinu b'mitzrayim, because they made our lives bitter. Shneamar v'yimaru et chayehem, as it says, and they embitter our lives. Umagbiya matzah, and you pick up the matzah, biyado in his hand. Vomea, and you say, "Matzah zosh anu achlim," that we're eating this matzah. Al shame, because of shall we speak, but say kam shall avotin lachmitz ad shenigla aleim melech malchem lachim kadosh baruch hu. They didn't have time for their bread to rise until that God revealed himself to them. The only one blessed be he. V'ga'alam. Ga'alam is the last word of the line. Miad, immediately, shenemar, as it says, v'yafuta batzek. And the verse says, because they baked their dough, etc. you might notice if you look at it for another few minutes is something very strange. In chapter 7, the Rambam brought the verse for Pesach, but not the verses for the other two, Matzah and Maror. In chapter 8, the Rambam brought the verses for all three. Do you hear what I said?
Yeah.
Now remember, chapter 7 is the instructions, and chapter 8 is the Seder itself. So now everyone has to think, by looking inside and looking at the Haggadah, why in the instructions does the Rambam only bring the verse for Pesach, but not for Matzah and Maror? Whereas in chapter 8, which is the Haggadah itself, he brings the verses for all three.
Then you expound, and when you do Maggi, then you have to go beyond like the minimal obligations.
Yeah, but so why? But what's the difference between the verse for the Pesach that did come in the instructions, whereas the between the to the verses of Matzah and Maror that didn't come in the instructions?
I use a Rabbi Schlesinger's Shir terms. I think Zion is the prescription, and
you're right. But
the A is description.
But what's different about the Pesach that it appears
he doesn't have the Pesach, and so he
No. That's not it. That's not it.
Okay.
That's what you would have expected me to be asking for, because that's been what we've been talking about. But it's something else. You have to look inside. They look in the Haggadah and read the verses.
I noticed one thing. He changes the order.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is...
Which order? Of Maror and Matzah.
Well, a couple of times he changes the order. In Zion, he mentions Pesach, Matzah, Maror, and then he says...
Which is coming elsewhere.
Pesach, Maror, Matzah.
Ah, I didn't even notice that, David.
Uh-huh. In the second one, he ends with Pesach.
No. That's just in the second one he begins with Pesach, but he goes back to Pesach at the end.
Yeah. That's what
to repeat
I mean.
It again.
Yeah.
That's just.
He does.
Pesach,
yeah, that's just because of the chronology of the discussion of the temple. We didn't go into that.
Okay.
Yeah. So think about this question for 2 or 3 minutes. It's interesting.
He lived in Egypt.
So
he didn't want to offend the other two. They talk about how bad the Egyptians were to us. He didn't want to offend his host.
No, but it is there in the Haggadah. It's just not in the instructions. Right?
Yeah.
Spirit of the Haggadah.
What does that mean?
He was trying to incite questions.
No, it's something. It's really something simple. It's just. It's in the words of the verses.
Well, in the explanation part, the only thing he doesn't raise up is the Pesach.
Right. And that's because we don't have the Korban Pesach.
In his hand. Oh, okay. Well, that was obvious.
I'll give you one more minute.
Okay, so why don't we do this together? Mm-hmm. Let's look in the Haggadah. In the Haggadah. We said it's page 22 or something?
It starts on 21.
21, about the Pesach. I read it in English. Pesach, why did our fathers eat a Passover offering during the period when the temple still stood? Because the Holy One was to be passed over the houses of our fathers in Egypt, as it is said, Exodus 12:27. You shall say, it is a Passover offering for Hashem who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians and spared our houses, and the people bowed down and prostrated themselves. Okay? I'm just reading. And then Matzah. Why do we eat this unleavened bread? Because the dough of our forefathers did not have time to become leavened before the King of Kings, the Holy and Blessed be He, revealed himself to them and redeemed them. And it is written, they baked the dough which they had brought out of Egypt into unleavened bread, for that fermented, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not delay, nor they had prepared any provisions for the way. Okay? And Mahor, why do you eat this bitter herbs? Because the Egyptians embittered the lives of our fathers in Egypt, as it says, they embittered their lives with hard labor, with mortar and bricks, with all manner of labor in the field. Whatever service they made them perform was hard labor, okay?
Be'amartem.
Right.
Because it's included in the verse, and you shall say. So that's
right.
Part of the prescription, not just part
right.
of the Haggadah.
Right. Is to Brooke say it again?
Yeah. You say it.
You said it very good. The verse for the Maror just says what the meaning of Maror is. Let me say it even better. The verse that we read from Maror, right, says we had bitter lives in Egypt. The verse that we read for the Matzah says that we made Matzah when we left. But the verse for the Korban Pesach says, you should say the following about the Pesach. In other words, in the context of the Torah, we're told the meaning of Matzah, but we're never told that you should tell the meaning of Matzah. And in the Torah, we're told the meaning of Maror, but never told that you should tell the meaning of Maror. But in the Pesach context, we're told the meaning of Pesach, and then it says, and you should say the meaning of the Pesach. So the Torah says explicitly that you're supposed to not just eat the Pesach, but you're also supposed to say what it means. It's an explicit mitzvah.
Rabbi Brooks.
So therefore, the Rambam, in his instruction sheet, which is Perek Zion, says you're supposed to say three things, Pesach, Matzah, Maror. But for the Pesach, he gives you the verse that is the instruction sheet in the Torah. Because the Torah gives you instructions, says when you eat the Pesach, you should say. Whereas in the Haggadah of the Rambam, he's not giving instructions, he's just telling you what he wants you to say. So he gives you verses to amplify what you're supposed to say in Pesach, Matzah, Maror. So I wouldn't have noticed the difference in the verses had I not compared the two chapters in the Rambam. So why don't we look at this verse about the Pesach in the Torah? Because now it turns out to be such a central verse. So that verse is Exodus 12:27.
That could be why there's a break in the Mishnah itself, Rabbi, mm-hmm. where we say, it says,
12:27.
It says, Pesach.
There's no break between Pesach and the next mention there.
It wasn't there.
Okay, so we're going to read on as you're looking. So we look in the Torah, let's say at verse 25. It shall be that when you come to the land that Hashem will give you, as He has spoken, you shall observe this service. It shall be that when your children shall say to you, what is this service that you shall say? It is a Pesach feast offering to Hashem, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when He smote the Egyptians, but He saved our households. You're supposed to talk about the Pesach offering.
But it gives you an explicit quote to say, is your point, is Rambam's point.
No, that's not my point. My point is that Torah tells you to talk about the Pesach. It's not just that, we want to talk about it to explain it, but the Torah tells you to, do that. And if you add to that, what we said a few minutes ago, that really the matzah and the maror are to be eaten with the Pesach, they're really part of the mitzvah of Pesach, therefore you can say to yourself that the instruction sheet that says, tell your children this is a Pesach offering, the Pesach offering includes matzah and maror.
That's the break in that pasuk. V'achlu asal basar balayla hazeh tzli esh. And then there's a vav. U'matzas al morarim yochluhu.
Yeah.
So as if the Pesach is there. And then u'matzas al morarim yochluhu.
With. Al means with.
U, but there's an u.
And with, right? You should eat it. And you should eat it with the following. So they are adjuncts.
But we've said that the vav is like a separation. It's,
I don't think it's a separation here, especially since it comes with the word with.
Can I ask one question, slightly off the subject? That the end of that verse, and the people bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. The people automatically just the Hebrews, or could that be the Egyptians?
In this context,
I
guess
their head and prostrated.
It's just the children of Israel that Moshe is talking to.
Talking to them, but
that's what it says in the commentary.
It does.
At least here, yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, the point is that apparently we can understand there's an explicit verse in the Torah that says to talk about what you're reading. Yeah. And that's why Rabban Gamliel says, if you didn't talk, you didn't fulfill your obligation. Which obligation? This obligation in this particular verse. And then we have to ask ourselves, why is this only Rabban Gamliel's opinion, if it's an explicit verse? So the answer...
It was the Rosh
Hashiva. I don't know. Now it becomes so obvious, right? How could you argue with that?
He was the head of the yeshiva.
Yeah, but why is it a minority opinion? Why isn't it simple and obvious? Okay, I don't know the answer to that question. So we're getting near the end of our study together. We have a little bit more to do in the Mishnah. So I wanted to move on to question 11. Question 11 was, what common denominator in the explanations of Rabban Gamliel concerning the Pesach and the Matzah is open to alternative interpretation? Something that David hinted to a little bit earlier. Rabban Gamliel says about the Pesach well, you know what? It's really, Rabban Gamliel only says about the Pesach what the Torah says. I'm sorry about my question. You know, let's skip that question. Let's skip that question. I think I have to rethink that.
But Rabbi Gamliel may be a minority opinion on that there's three things.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it makes a little more sense than now that we read the Chumash is saying, mention the Pesach offering.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it's to be eaten with, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But you just have to explain one thing.
Okay.
He says, no, that's not right. You have to explain three things.
Ah, so you're saying perhaps everyone agrees you have to talk about the Pesach.
Of course, because it says that.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But he says, no, that's not right. There's three.
Ah, very good. Okay.
I thought rabbis always tried to find things in threes.
Okay. Explain. Wow, just writing that down.
Can you say that again, please?
Everyone agreed you have to mention the Pesach offering because it's explicit in the Chumash. Rabbi Gamliel says, no, that's not correct. You have to mention three things. That's his disagreement with the others. He called out all three. Because okay. The Chumash just says one.
Yeah.
Just says the Pesach offering.
Okay. Very good. So as we close, I wanted to go to the next part of the Mishnah. The Chol Dor V'Dor. Right after Rabban Gamliel is finished, the Mishnah says in every generation, one must see himself as if he went out of Egypt, as it says, and it brings a verse. And we pointed out this is the beginning of the second part of the Mishnah, and its character is different. The statement says in each generation one must see himself as if he left Egypt. That's clearly an instruction, an overarching instruction. It's not something to do and not something to say. It's a tenor for the whole, an atmosphere for the whole evening. Rabban Gamliel is something you're supposed to say and do. But the Chol Dor V'Dor is simply reminding you of the proper way to conduct yourself the whole evening. Everything you're talking about is to be the first person, and it's all about a personal experience. And like we said earlier, this really goes back, it leapfrogs over Rabban Gamliel, back to the drasha of Arami Oved Avi, which is all in the first person. What happened to me, what happened to us, what happened to us. Now, in our Haggadot today, we say the words, Bechol Dor V'Dor. But that's not right. In other words, that's an instruction. It's not something to say. Okay. It's extremely insightful or instructive to see the way the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah brings down this matter of Bechol Dor V'Dor in each generation. So we turn to the back of the sheets that I gave out. This is something that Drashot said over every year. It's a very famous thing. So we look in the Rambam. First, let's look in the Rambam's Perek Chet, which we said is the Haggadah itself, right? Zayin is the instructions. Chet is the Haggadah itself. And interestingly, in Halacha Dalet, the Rambam went through the Pesach Matzan Maror, okay? And he ended by saying that in this generation, we don't anymore eat the Pesach. And then Halacha He is, look at Halacha in the Rambam, Ve'omer, and he says, Lefichach anu hayavim lehodot lahalel l'shabeach lefa'er, etc., etc., etc. See where I am? What's missing? There's a white space between Halacha Dal and Halacha He. There's something that's missing.
Oh, the other ones.
Where are we again?
In Perek Chet of the Rambam.
Oh, down here?
We're in the words that aren't written, I'm trying to be cute, between Halacha Dal and Halacha He. What should be there, if the Rambam is following the order of our Mishnayot, as he is, right. In the Rambam's Haggadah, he never has us saying Bechol Dor V'Dor, because it's not something to be said. It's an instruction of how to conduct yourself. Whereas, where we expect the Rambam to write Bechol Dor V'Dor, not in Halacha, not in Perek Het, but in Perek Zayin, which is the instruction sheet. So look in the instruction sheet that precedes the, you're supposed to read Perek Zayin before the evening, right? So there, the Rambam says in Halacha Vav of Perek Zayin, he says, Bechol Dor V'Dor. So that's, I think, really fascinating to remember and realize that in a pristine sense, the phrase Bechol Dor V'Dor is not to be said to say the night. It's supposed to be in your kishkes and everything you say, but it's not something that you say. Furthermore, look at the way the Rambam interprets, or perhaps in a different text, of the statement of the Mishnah Bechol Dor V'Dor. Here we are, we're reading it slowly. Bechol Dor V'Dor, Chayav Adam, look at the next word.
Harot.
Laharot. I suppose, what does the Mishnah say?
Lerot.
One letter difference.
Hey.
The Mishnah says Lerot. The Rambam says Leharot.
What's the difference?
What's the difference, anyone know? What does Lerot mean?
Harot is a different word.
Lirot is to see. What is laharot?
Show himself.
To show.
Show himself. Yeah.
Right, to show himself. The Rambam says, Bechol dor v'dor hayav adam laharot et atzmo. Ke'ilu hu ba'atzmo yatsa atam shibud mitzrayim. Says the Rambam, in every generation, a man must show himself as if he himself now went forth from Egyptian slavery. So the Mishnah says every man must see himself. The Rambam says every man must show himself. So clearly, to see yourself as an internal process, to show yourself as an external process. Certainly the Rambam is saying something different than what the Mishnah is saying. And again, it might be an interpretation, it might be a different text that he has. The Rambam is saying you have to act tonight, this night, as if you're a free person. And that makes perfect sense. The instructions for how to do the Haggadah are telling you how to act. You have to conduct yourself as a free person, which means you have to drink 4 cups of wine, you have to recline on pillows, you have to have someone else pour the glass for you, you have to show yourself, you have to act externally as a free person. Whereas the Mishnah said you have to feel it inside. So it could be the Rambam is saying that the halakha can't command you how to feel, it can't command you how to act. Now of course, if you're supposed to act this way, that's in order to get us to feel that way, but we're not commanding you to feel, that just has to be a natural result of the way you act. But the mitzvah is to act as if you're a free person.
Rabbi Gamliel, Shiva Harara, wouldn't let anybody in the Shiva who his insides weren't like his outsides.
That's probably a different Rabbi Gamliel.
You think so?
This is the Rabbi Gamliel of before the bite, of the years approximately 30 to 60, and then it was given over, the reins of leadership given over to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the reins of leadership were taken over by Rabbi Gamliel II, of the one you're talking about, of Yavne. Unfortunately, they have the same name, so it's often hard to know which is which. But the one you're talking about, the Gemara says explicitly, was in Yavne, because that's where the event happened, whereas here it seems that these are Mishnayot that are from before Chorban HaBayit. Yeah, so I'm going to decide quickly if we should just end with this.
But it says, Haya Omer. Rabbi Gamliel would say.
Yes.
So it could be the one
well,
way back.
But why would he say it? If he would say this, this is what he used to say during the time of the Bayit. Okay. Okay, I think that's a possible place to end for today.
Very good.
Okay.